Play mode.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Gemini Labors of Hercules. This is the fourth one, only because we had an intro as the first one, because this of course is the third sign. And I see that we've got with us, we've got Jenny Ross, Victor Dutrow, and Walter Pullen, who is both an advanced student and part of the faculty. So welcome all of you. Let me see if I can unmute you so that we can all say hi. Okay, Jenny, are you there?
I am, I'm here.
Hello, welcome to the webinar.
Thank you.
Victor, are you there?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to the webinar. And Walter, are you there?
Yes. Hello, BL and everyone.
Hey there. I hope you're going to help us discuss because typically we got some pretty quiet people here, although Victor's a good one for asking questions, so I'm glad to see you here. Okay, let me go through some of the quick things first. I'm going to keep everybody on mute just for the noise. So when it gets to the point where you want to ask a question, please raise your hand. Your hand should be right about over here. And then we'll unmute you one at a time. And that way, hopefully, we won't have any of the echoing and back noise that we've got. And I've got several people here on the staff. Joe Waltz is there helping, Kay Hannon is there, and Brett, pretending to be Michael, is there as well. So they're going to help me as I'm going through the presentation. They'll watch for raised hands or if you type a question in or whatnot, they'll help me out that way. And also, there's a little time lag, so when you get ready to ask a question or to talk or whatever, wait just a minute or two before, or wait for the pause before someone else speaks. We'll get used to it as we talk along. And as I mentioned earlier, you can add questions along in here. Okay, so does anybody, why don't all of you right now raise your hand just so I know that you know where that function is. And Walter, I've got yours. I don't see a hand raised for Jenny or Victor. There you go, Victor, I got yours. Jenny, let me unmute you for a minute here. Jenny, can you find the, can you find the little hand there?
Yes, I have it.
Okay, good, good. All right. So all of you know where your hands are and you can raise them and everything. So Jenny, if you'll put yours down and then I'll mute you again. There you go. Okay. All right. So, of course, these are the Labors of Hercules, and this is based on a series of articles that Alice Bailey wrote and that was later published into the book. I have several of these slides that I kind of alternate, but the introduction to Labors of Hercules has some really great quotes as to why that we actually study the myth of Hercules. And this is one of my favorite ones. Because Hercules shows from the mental plane through the emotional plane and out into the physical plane manifestation the synthetic picture of the work that is done by every disciple who is a son of man and a son of God. It is a work that can be arduous, slow, and carried forward under great difficulties. Often it is done in blind ignorance of the forces released and of the results to be achieved. But step by step, the aspirant is led along the path of knowledge and development. His character and nature are tested and tried until the qualities which characterize the form can be transmuted into those which reveal the soul. And that is why we study Hercules. At the beginning of all of Hercules's labors, he faces the Presiding One. And we're told the great Presiding One within the council chamber of the Lord has watched the labors of the Son of Man, who is the Son of God. He and the teacher saw the third great gate opening before the Son of Man, revealing a new chance to tread the way. Send out the word to guard the sacred tree. Let Hercules unfold the power to search without discouragement, deception, or too great a speed. Let perseverance now be called upon. He has done well so far, and thus the word went forth. Then Hercules turns to his teacher and says, "Tell me the way, O teacher of my soul. I seek the apples, and I need them quickly for my use. Show me the quickest way, and I will go." Isn't that the way that we all want it? We want the quick version. We want the fast food. "Not so, my son," replied the teacher. "The way is long. Two things alone I will confide to you, and then it is for you to prove the truth of what I say. Remember that the sacred tree is guarded well. Three maidens fair cherish the tree, protecting well its fruits. A dragon with 100 heads protects the maidens and the tree. Guard thyself well from strength too great for thee, from wiles too subtle for thy comprehension. Watch well. The second thing that I will say to thee is that thy search will carry thee where five great tests will meet thee on the way. Each will afford thee scope for wisdom, understanding, skill, and opportunity. Watch well. I fear, my son, that you will fail to recognize these points along the way. But time alone will show. God speed thee in thy search." And so it begins. With confidence, Hercules goes forth, sure of himself, his wisdom, and his strength. He searched north, but did not find the tree. No one he met in question knew where it was. He wandered all over, searching, yet no tree was found. Sad and discouraged, he continued his searching. The teacher, silently watching from afar, sent Nereus to him, a guide, to help Hercules. Nereus tried a variety of subtle ways to help, but Hercules failed to understand and ignored him. Hercules failed the first of the five lesser tests of this particular labor. But he was then allowed to go on. So he turns south, the dark place. In astrology, the northern half of the chart represents daylight. Due north is the top, the midheaven, the 10th house cusp, and the midheaven represents our spiritual goals. So there's a lot of, well, of course it's an astrological interpretation, that is the name of the subtitle of the book, but there's a lot of these little subtle hints in here that we see. The south is the bottom half of the chart, the night, and due south is actually the fourth house cusp, the nadir. This represents our past. It's the symbol of going back into the world, the opposite pole of spirit. Hercules, still dreaming of quick success with his labor, meets, and I'm going to butcher this name, Antaeus, the serpent, and wrestles with him. Thinking that he is near, because he knows that there was the dragon guarding it, he hopes that his strength will overcome his opponent so he can reach the apples. But he can't beat Antaeus, and he asks himself why. Where lies my fault? Why can Antaeus conquer me? Even when an infant, I destroyed a serpent in my cot. With my own hands, I strangled it. So why fail now? Trying one more time with all of his might, he grasped the serpent with both hands and lifted Antaeus high in the air. Gemini, remember, is an air sign. It's a mutable sign, and glamour takes a variety of forms, which represent Earth here. That is appearance and not reality. So that's why he could vanquish Antaeus by raising him into the air. And Antaeus, vanquished now, spoke, I come again in different guise at the eighth gate. Prepare again to wrestle. And we see him again wrestling with another serpent in the Scorpio labor. So he finally passed this little test here, and watching teacher, he reported it to the presiding one that the second of the minor tests had then be passed. Okay, I'm going to, does anybody have any comments that they'd like to make so far on this particular, I don't see any hands. Okay. I do. Yes, Walter. Okay, it looks like yourself. There you go. Go ahead, Walter.
So I find it very interesting in that it says that the first of the five lesser tests is passed, replied the teacher, and failure marks this stage. Let Hercules proceed. In other words, I find it notable that it seemed like it was the failure that resulted in the passing, which seems to suggest that humility needs to be learned, or one needs to learn that failure or the struggle is part of the way.
I agree with you. You know, I don't know about you, but in the life of BL, I learned my greatest lessons from my failures. And we always have that opportunity to redo it. The one that he failed was, of course, to listen to his inner self, to Nereus. But he finally did, later on in this labor, we'll see that. But yeah, that's exactly it. He was allowed to proceed, even though he failed on the first part of this particular, the first of the five little tests within this one. And you bring up a good point, Walter. We know about the big initiations, you know, we know about the nine initiations and what happens in each one, but we all have multiple initiations along the way with the minor ones that we face. And this is brought out quite clearly, I think, in this particular labor. Thank you, Walter. Do you have anything more that you'd like to add before we move on?
Not right now, but thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'm going to mute you again. Okay, confident, Hercules goes on. He's renewed with courage because he just conquered the second test, and so now he turns to look in the west, and he immediately meets disaster. Okay, now astrologically, the west is the right half of the chart. Due west is the descendant, the seventh house cusp. This is the significant other in the chart in mundane astrology, or the divine marriage of the soul and the personality esoterically. And here it represents Bucyrus. He is the great arch-deceiver, the son of the waters, and a close kin to Poseidon. And he takes hold of Hercules. Hercules sees him as this false god, and he brings delusion to the sons of men through words of seeming wisdom, claiming to know the right truth that Hercules just sucked right up. He bought it completely, looking for the easy way, for someone to tell him and get him along his way. Because of it, he became trapped for a year to this false teacher, Bucyrus. He grew weaker and weaker under Bucyrus's controls until Bucyrus was then able to actually chain Hercules to an altar and keep him captive. Finally, Hercules remembers the words of Nereus that he was told long ago. Remember that test that he failed? That truth and strength lie within himself. And when Hercules turns inward, he can then evoke the power of the sons of men, who are the sons of God. He is finally able to break his bonds, seize Bucyrus, and chain him to the altar instead. Hercules' teacher, standing again silently watching, acknowledged that Hercules has passed this test, finally realizing the importance of what Nereus had told him earlier. Okay, before we move on, anybody have any comments about this particular part of it? Okay. So Hercules resumes his search for the apples, chastened but wiser, and suddenly he hears a cry of distress. He's already behind in his search, and so he has to think about what another delay is going to cost him. But with another cry for help, Hercules springs into action and speeds to his brother's help. He frees Prometheus, chases the vultures off, and tends to his ill brother until he is recovered. The watching teacher, silent up to this point, finally speaks to Hercules. The fourth stage on the way unto the sacred tree is passed. There has been no delay. The rule upon the chosen path, which hastens all success, is learn to serve. Hercules again resumes his search for the apples. North, south, and west he's already been. But so far, still no tree, no apples, and he's getting worn and weary from his travels. He was delayed already for that year, plus the travels have taken him a long time. He hears from a passing pilgrim of a distant mountain in the east where the tree can be found. Astrologically, the east is the left half of the chart, with due east being the ascendant, the first house cusp that represents the soul. Hercules heads that way and sees his goal, imagining his success at last, but again he is arrested by a sense of distress. Hercules sees Atlas struggling under the load of the world on his back, clearly in agony. Forgetting his search, Hercules rushes forward and removes the load from Atlas's shoulder and shoulders it himself. And in shouldering his brother's burden, the load rolled off both men stood free. Before him stood the grateful giant, apples in hand, offering them with love to Hercules. The three sisters were also there with more apples, telling him the way to the apples is always through service. Before he left, Hercules returned the apples for those who follow. Returning home, his teacher congratulated him and immediately sent him on his next labor. Okay, does anybody have, that's actually the end of this myth, of course. Does anybody have any comments that they would like to say before we move on to the meaning of the myth? Yes, Walter.
Yes. So I see that it says that the way of the apples is through service, although it occurred to me that I could perhaps qualify that and say it's through selfless service. In other words, I appreciate Greek myths, and interestingly, for this labor of Hercules, I learned it in a non-esoteric context that actually when Hercules offered to shoulder the worlds of Atlas's burden so that Atlas could retrieve the apples, that Atlas wanted to, this is just in the version that I learned, tried to trick Hercules by leaving him shouldering the worlds forever so that Atlas could be free. And it occurred to me that in an interpretation that rather than seeing Atlas as like a villain here, that there is an aspect of service that's important to realize, especially since this is the second time Hercules has done service in the myth, and that is to avoid the martyr syndrome of trying to be the one who performs service from a more egocentric standpoint, as opposed to really doing what needs to be done. In other words, and trying to say like, oh, give me the load, which is another way to freeze you in place and keep you from going on your quest. That was just a thought that occurred to me when covering that part and comparing it to an alternate way that I've seen the myth presented.
Right, exactly. And you bring out, your first words were exactly on the money. It's not just service, and it's not a duty that we have to do. It is selfless service. It's something that, you know, we talk a lot about sacrifice, and unfortunately the word connotes for many that we have to give up something to sacrifice, but really it's the selfless service of giving. In many cases, because we lovingly do that. And that is what they're talking about here, and that is the point that I think you were making. And thank you very much for doing that. Do you have anything else you'd like to say, or does anybody else, before we move on to discussing the meaning of the myth?
Good to hear. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so here with the meaning of the myth, what we're told when we read the wonderful information that's in here is, and again, we see this when we look at the PATH classes that we're taking. You've got first the sign of the mystic, and you go inward for a really long time, and you trust, and you have all this devotion, but then you need to begin with the occult phase, okay? You need to become a man of action and start thinking, not just blindly trusting. And with Hercules, he needed to carry his desire through the rest of the test of Gemini here. He had to conquer the five senses, all right? He has to use them is what I have on the slide, and that's probably the best way to do it. We learn on the physical plane. Our consciousness doesn't do us much good without the vehicles through which we express it. And so that's what we have to do. We have to raise our consciousness, but then be able to express it physically, and we do that through the senses. They open up new fields of awareness, and that's what this particular myth is teaching us, although what we find in all of these myths is, as we go further into them, there's correlations to everything in life, not just the sign. Okay, so the physical plane is the place where experience is gained, where the causes initiated in the world of mental effort must manifest and achieve objectivity. And so let's take a little sidebar here and talk about the senses now. Let's see if I can collapse this. Okay. This is a combination, let me see, in Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 817, is the chart that looks like this, that has the stuff on the middle and right side, in the egoic lotus and centers chart. And then I believe it was Victoria Stone, she added some of the information in Treatise on Cosmic Fire that starts at page 186, and also some of the other information to include the senses on each level. See the colors that we've got here? So you can see on the physical and etheric plane that hearing is the purple, touch is the violet, sight is the light blue, taste is the yellow, and smell is the green. Okay, hearing was the first sense we developed. And then touch, and then sight, and then taste, and then smell, in that order. And TCF, that passage in page 186 talks about, on the physical plane, he finds his own note in the density of the form. On the astral plane, he finds his brother's note through identity of emotion. On the mental plane, he begins to find his group note. Remember, the soul is there on the mental plane, and the soul represents group activity. On the Buddhic plane, the plane of wisdom, he begins to find the note of his planetary logos. And on the Atmic or spiritual plane, the note logoic begins to sound within his consciousness. So as we move up through the planes, we can see the correspondences of the senses. Hearing down, what the heck is that? Hearing is down here, and then on the physical plane, it becomes clairaudience on the astral plane. It becomes higher clairaudience on the mental plane, comprehension on the Buddhic plane, and beatitude on the Atmic plane. And then we can do that with all of them. Touch becomes psychometry, planetary psychometry, healing, and active service. Sight becomes clairvoyance, high clairvoyance, divine vision, and finally, realization. Taste becomes imagination, discrimination, intuition, and finally, perfection. And smell becomes emotional idealism, spiritual discernment, idealism, and all knowledge. So, for those of you who don't have this chart, I found it on the University of the Seven Rays webpage. They have a store, and if you go there, they have posters and charts, reference posters and charts. And I found it there. Didn't cost that much. I got it and a couple of the other ones that they have because they're great things. And I personally just keep this posted on the wall above my desk because I refer to it all the time. Okay. let's go back to our meaning here. So this is basically what they're discussing when they're talking about knowledge is the quest of the senses, and wisdom is the synthetic knowledge of the soul, as the soul consciousness is expressed on the higher levels of these various planes. Without understanding the knowledge, how do we apply the light of wisdom to the problems of life itself? In this particular labor, Hercules is faced with a tremendous task of bringing together the two poles of his being and of coordinating or at-one-ing the soul and the body so that duality gives place to unity and the pairs of opposites are blended. The apples, like the Garden of Eden, symbolically represent knowledge of duality, of good and evil, of the pull of the opposites, the nature of the soul, good, and the form, evil, when it hinders the soul. In the search of the golden apples on the physical plane, Hercules had to conquer glamour and illusion. For through the spiritual aspiration, the disciple is very apt to be taken in by astralism and lower psychicism. This is also one of the problems of the mystics, is that blind devotion. And we see that with Hercules as he faces Busiris and is completely deceived. The test of glamour and illusion dispelled, he then continues his search and finds delay again when he meets Prometheus, who needs help. But his teacher tells him there has really been no delay because serving and helping others hastens our own progress. And then came the final test to help without Atlas. Hercules is so overwhelmed by Atlas's suffering that he forgets his search for the golden apples. This is what Walter was saying. He forgets the little self. Because in self-forgetfulness is his selfless act of shouldering the burden, he actually passed the real test. Okay, any comments on this before we move on? Nobody? Okay. So we've looked at this a couple of different ways, and here we're going to do look at them again. The whole of this story really signifies the lesson, which is the first all aspirants have to master, and one which is it impossible to learn until the tests of Aries and Taurus have been undergone. Then on the physical plane, in the field of the brain and in his walking consciousness, the disciple has to register contact with the soul and to recognize its qualities. He must no longer be that visionary mystic, but must add to the mystical achievement the occult knowledge of reality. So we saw that when he was contacted by Nereus, especially in the early stages of the search, the higher self will manifest in a flash of illumination, and then it's gone, as a sudden realization of a truth so elusive, so fleeting, that at first the disciple cannot grasp it, and that's what happened to him here. In the case of a more advanced disciple who has established contact with the soul and who therefore may be ready for instruction from one of the great teachers, it is found that the master works just as Nereus did. He cannot always be contacted, and only occasionally does the disciple come into touch with the master. When he does, he need not expect congratulations upon his wonderful progress, nor will he find careful elucidation of his problem or a lengthy outline of the work that he should do. The master will give a hint and disappear. He will make a suggestion and say no more. It is for the disciple to act upon the hint as best he may and to follow up the suggestion, should he deem it wise. The reason that Nereus, the master here, is elusive and gives but a flash of thought are two. First, the aspirant is of no personal interest to the master until he has achieved the point in his evolution where he is so closely in touch with his soul that he becomes a magnetic server in the world. Then the master hints, and as those hints are followed, he may give more. But, and this is the point that must be emphasized, only in connection with the work that he has to do in the field of world service. And then there's that great phrase, aspirants need to remember that they become masters only by mastering. Isn't that cool? And the second point that the master is elusive, the physical bodies of the aspirant are in no condition to stand the greatly heightened vibration of one who has achieved. The body would be shattered and the brain overstrained if one of the masters made constant contact with a disciple before he had even learned to know the symbol of his higher self. When by our own efforts we are beginning to live as souls, when by our own self-initiated endeavor we are learning to serve and be channels of spiritual energy, then we shall know our master Nereus more intimately. And then, almost inevitably, our knowledge of the work that the great ones have to do will be so vital and so real that we forego our own desire for contact and seek only to lift the burden that they carry. So this was the lesson of Atlas. And it's been said many times, but, you know, of course, the first initiation, 25% of our vehicles are flooded with the atomic substance. The second initiation, it's up to 50%. The third initiation, it's up to 75%. At the fourth initiation, at the Buddhic level, is where it becomes 100%. So, you know, masters are above the fifth level. So, you know, that's a really good point, I think, that he brings out here about the fact that the physical body of the master, the heightened energy of the master, you know, poor Schmoll down here, at the beginnings of the path, is not capable of that contact, sustained contact for a while. So what we saw was that at the beginning of his search, Hercules met Nereus, but he was not impressed, and so he wandered elsewhere, furiously seeking the satisfaction of his aspiration. He found the soul contact and didn't recognize it. And the way that he won was to lose sight of his spiritual selfishness by helping humanity. Okay, Hercules, the disciple, has known the touch of the higher self, but he did not know enough to stay with Nereus, so he turns south or back into the world. He had that high moment, he touched his soul, but it didn't last, and he drops back into the brain consciousness and enters upon another experience. He has to wrestle with Antarius, the serpent, but this time it is the serpent of astral glamour and not the serpent of desire. It is the glamours of lower psychicism that he has to wrestle with. And it goes on to tell us that according to the temperament of the aspirant, so will be the glamour that he faces. some may get sidetracked by spiritualistic phenomenon. Others, something like, you know, automatic writing or hearing voices. But it's discerning the voice of the soul from the false voices that is the actual lesson here. And the great truth underlying this symbolism, the air has always been regarded as the symbol or the element related to the Christ plane, also known as the Buddhic plane. The astral plane is the distorted reflection of the Buddhic plane, and it is only when we carry glamour up into the clear light of the Christ soul that we see the truth as it is and become invincible. So we develop the power of intuition, and we use a well-developed, well-stocked, well-trained mind. Then, of course, he fell into the clutches of Busiris, who claimed to be the teacher, and kept Hercules in bondage. We see a lot of this kind of stuff going on in the world today. People telling us they're the custodian of the truth when they wouldn't recognize it if it hit them in the face, right? The true initiate is known by his life and acts. He is too busy serving the race to find the time to interest people in himself. And eventually Hercules freed himself, as do all sincere seekers, and having escaped from the world of psychic and pseudo-spiritual glamour, he began to serve. First, he freed himself under the symbol of Prometheus, who signifies God incarnate, releasing him from the torture of the vultures of old. The solar plexus, the stomach, and the liver are externalizations of the desire nature. Hercules freed himself from the vultures of desire that had for so long tortured him. He gave up being selfish and gave up satisfying himself. He had two bitter lessons in the sign, and for this particular cycle was relatively free. Prometheus, the god within, could go forward to the service of the world and to lifting the burden of Atlas. After the sacrifice comes the reward, and Hercules received his great surprise after freeing both Prometheus and Atlas. Having given up his search in order to help the world, Atlas went for him to the garden and handed him the golden apples, bringing him in touch with the three beautiful maidens, the three aspects of the soul. At the beginning of the labor, he contacted his soul as Nereus. At the close of the labor, having overcome much glamour, he achieves a greatly increased vision of the soul and sees it in its three aspects, each one holding in it the potency of the three principles of divinity. Of the three maidens that he found, there was Aegle, symbolizing the glory of the life and the splendor of the setting sun, the magnificence of manifestation on the physical plane. She gives an apple to Hercules, saying, "The way to us is ever through deeds of love." Eurythia gives the gate, the soul, which is ever opened by love wisdom. She gives to Hercules an apple marked with the golden word, service. And Hesperus, the evening star, the star of initiation, typifies the will. She says to Hercules, "Tread the way, body, soul, and spirit, intelligence, love, and will, visioned and contacted by the selfless aspirant through service. Okay, any comments on that? So we see his progress. We see that he did gather the apples. And then what did he do? He gave the apples back for the next person seeking them. He changed his knowledge into wisdom. And so what do we see with the sign Gemini? What did we learn from this lesson? It's an air sign, as are Libra and Aquarius. It represents duality, fluidity. It controls every pair of the opposites, the underlying love that reaches our solar system through Gemini. Its polar opposite is Sagittarius, a fire sign, one-pointedness, preparation for initiation. And eventually, they have to fuse that axis. What did I do? I thought I had something here on the... Oh, here it is. A little unorganized here in my notes. Sorry about that. Pleiades and the Great Bear represent God, the macrocosm, while Castor and Pollux of Gemini represent man, the microcosm. They were also called Apollo, the sun god, and Hercules, the one who comes to labor. They represent the two aspects of man's nature, soul and his personality, spiritual man, and the human man through which he functions, Christ incarnate in matter, God working through the form. And it's interesting astronomically that the star Castor, who represents the mortal twin, is waning while the star Pollux, the immortal, is waxing. So as humanity is hopefully moving in that direction, it's borne out by what's happening astronomically, too, with the two main stars of the constellation Gemini, Castor and Pollux. The history of the soul's gradually increasing control are told for us in this constellation. And we see that in the mantra, I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. Gemini is a sign of intellect and has a vital effect on our Aryan race, where the mind and intellect are being developed. It's represented through gaining of occult knowledge and covers three main areas. Gemini governs all of education with the knowledge, the sciences, and it lays the foundation for wisdom. It also stands for the relation between anything, therefore governing language, intercommunication, and commerce. And it inaugurates changes. Remember, it's a mutable sign. New ideas, new impulses, making their presence felt, new and undeveloped lines of approach to spiritual truth emerge here. The ruler's Mercury, who's the interpreter, illuminating intellect, the messenger, and esoteric Venus, the principle of attraction and at-one-ment. The hierarchical ruler is Saturn, the generator of opportunity. And all three of them play their part in the life of an aspirant as he unifies higher and lower, passes through the five stages of this test, and visions the goal which ultimately he must achieve. So, anybody have any comments on this as we're getting ready to wrap this particular webinar up? Go ahead, Jenny.
I just wanted to make a comment that in Hercules' journey at the beginning, it's very Mercury, symbolic of Mercury in terms of having to figure things out and travel and in a way be a messenger. And as he really starts to transcend his personality and enter into compassionate service, then it's ruled more by the Venus energy. Just as, you know, the exoteric rulers and esoteric rulers are expressed.
Right. And that's actually the whole point of them. You know, you mundane rulers apply to ordinary man, and as the soul begins to control, the esoteric ruler begins to take, begins to influence. I won't say it begins to take control. It begins to influence until, like the Castor and Pollux, one begins to wane and the other waxes.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for pointing that out. Does anybody else have a comment that they would like to make? Okay, then I would like to revisit what we've looked at each time, all the various different signs, and the progress that Hercules makes. We're still in the first four signs of the preparatory ones. Hold on just one second. And so sooner or later, we're going to make our way through all of these. But it's a great book. The symbolism that is in this book is just absolutely amazing. Okay, guys, we're early. We got 10 more minutes. So any more questions? Any comments anybody would like to make? Anybody on the staff have a comment that they would like to make?
Hi, BL, this is Joe. I just thought you might help us even think through the potential hierarchical ruler in this sign. When I was reading it, I was thinking about the Earth, potentially the relationship to Atlas, and how there's even a hint of the hierarchical rulership in this particular labor.
I think it said the hierarchical ruler was actually Saturn.
Well, Michael, I believe in the Gemini full moon webinars, used Earth as the hierarchical ruler.
I'm looking for my little chart that I thought I had handy here. Hierarchical ruler of Gemini. Yeah, you're right, it is the Earth, and what that does is that relates Sagittarius and Gemini together. You're right. I wonder why it said in the actual labor in the book that Saturn was...
esoteric astrology, I do believe it is given as Earth.
It is, you're right. I've got my little chart here from that, and that's exactly what it says. So thank you, Joe, for pointing that out. Of course, the whole purpose of going through all of these is to eventually balance the opposites and then fuse them. So Gemini merges with Sagittarius ultimately, and it's the Earth is the esoteric ruler of Sagittarius, and it's the hierarchical ruler of Gemini. So when you get beyond that point, when you've merged the soul and body, and you're fusing the axes, then you've just moved to the hierarchical, which in reality, you don't get to the hierarchical rulers until after you've taken the third initiation. So that's quite an interesting point.
And that's what, when I was reading it, it just seemed the symbolism of Atlas and the surrender of the golden apples back to the sort of symbols of a higher hierarchical influence seemed to me one of the lessons of Gemini. You
know, right, exactly. And that was part of that was the one lesson of Antaeus, the serpent that he had to raise him from the ground level where the serpent was into the air, because that was the way that he conquered the earth aspect of that and moved it into the air, into the Buddhic level. So very good point. Thank you very much for bringing that up. Any other comments? Questions? Come on, Victor. You're good with questions. Okay, well, if we have no more questions or comments, here we go. Yes, Jenny, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering if you could give a better reference for that chart that you use so that I can find it.
I'll have to look it up and give it to you. You know, my husband always teases me about my highlighting and my tabs. I've got, I'll look it up and I'll post it. I've got, there we go, the three rulers. I've got it. It's right here. It's on page 68 of Esoteric Astrology.
Okay.
I think Victoria may have the colorful chart also. I don't know if that's posted on the information section in the Moria Federation. Kay may know, but I know that that is distributed, and it could be that we could get her permission to just post the digital version on the Moria Federation site.
That would be great. All right, I'll watch for an email if anybody can do that. Thank you.
Okay, Walter, you have a question?
Oh, yeah. In the questions box, which hopefully people can see, there is on the Makara site a simple web page that has the planes and the senses if one wanted to have reference for that. If, like, they don't have the books readily available.
Ah.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I noticed Francis is with us.
Are you? Hi, Francis.
Unmute him. Okay, there he is. Francis,
hi, everyone. I just stepped in. Hi, can you hear me? Let me see if I can unmute myself.
Yeah, we can hear
me.
We can hear you. Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're just wrapping up the webinar, but...
well, I got the time wrong then. I thought this was at 9 o'clock GMT. Which would make it 3 o'clock. Well, obviously it wouldn't make it 3 o'clock, but that's what I looked up. Oh, well, I hope you had a great webinar.
I had
a great nap in preparation for it.
Do you have any thoughts about this labor, Francis? Because we were kind of looking for some closing comments.
Oh, let's see. It's I don't know what you've said and what people have mentioned. It's the most, it's the longest labor in terms of both that, in ter- terms of the effort that Hercules had to expend in order to create it, and also it's the longest one in this Labors of Hercules booklet, which the Tibetan wrote. It's the longest labor in terms of the text by the Tibetan. It deals with the four directions and the symbolism of the spirit in the north, which Hercules wasn't able to have a direct experience of because he went directly for it. If you remember, he first went north. And Nereus was sent to give him all kinds of clues. But this was the higher mental plane, and he was literally unable to hear. I think the text describes him as being blind, but he was unable to respond to the subtlety of the higher mental plane until he went through the tests that lie in the south, which has to do with going back into the world and of the earth, where he met Nereus. And if you'll notice, there was a foreshadowing of what happens in Scorpio with the raising into the air of Nereus, taking the enemy out of, or I should say the obstacles, out of its own element, which is, of course, moving it from the plane of earth to the mental plane. But then he had to deal with the glamour in the west, which came through Busiris, I guess, this false teacher. And that false teacher is not so much a person as the entire realm of the astral. And then finally crossing through the midway point to the east, which is the midway point always figures very strongly in any labor, whether it's mentioned or not, specifically in the labors, and you know, in the labor that you're reading. It's nonetheless the midway point is, once you know he crossed the midway point, then he was able to have the experiences that led him to the east. That's when he discovered, for instance, that there was a tree that lie against the distant mountains, and of course the mountains always describe the higher mental, the levels of the higher mental, so he had the experiences that allowed him to find those, though they weren't at all what he conceived them to be. They lie on the path of service through releasing two great disciples,
Prometheus and Atlas,
and there's a whole this is a huge in a way this is the sum total of the entire process. Some of the labors, like the one in Scorpio, have a much more focused quality, but this one really, well, I think he mentions that, you know, whereas Taurus all happens on an island off of Crete, this happens in the entire world. So it's a huge labor and a huge process of becoming, which is really the entire process of preparation, which leads to service and the forgetting of the self, of the little self, in order then to discover the already existent inner self or the higher self.
And that gets to what we were talking about right when you joined us, which was the earth as the hierarchical ruler, where this is earth-wide, this is world service. And it is, his field here is the whole earth, as opposed to, like you said, the island of Crete.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, that Venus is one of the three maidens. Was it Hesperides that's connected with the morning star. And, you know, Venus is, isn't that, I think it is, I can't remember.
Right.
One of the three maidens. And she, wasn't she the one that guards the path to the final approach?
The star, right, the evening star, the star of initiation, typifying the will, and tread the way through love and will and selfless service. And then Eurythia was the soul in love wisdom. So Venus was represented probably in three different ways here. The first one.
They're associated with the rising, with the, let's see.
The rising and the setting sun.
Yeah, with the rising and the setting. That's it, which is, of course, two different aspects of Venus. Yeah, it's
the splendor of the setting sun was the first one, A-E-G-L-E, Eagle, the glory of life and the splendor of the setting sun. Hesperus was the evening star, the star of initiation.
There it is, Hesperus.
Right, and Eurythia was the keeper of the gate of the soul, ever opened by love wisdom.
Interesting. Probably at a higher turn of the spiral of the three muses, you know, which we read about in Greek literature, you know,
right.
Because remember they had one eye which they passed among them. So it suggests the single identity, you know.
I show two hands. I show Walter with a hand up and Jenny with a hand up. Do either or both, oh, Walter put his down, Jenny put hers down. Okay. Victor, yes.
They were just stretching.
Okay, Victor, you have a question? Comment?
Can you hear me?
Yes, just barely, but.
Okay, now you can probably hear me better.
A little, but not much.
Okay, my question is, this labor that's in Gemini seems to me like it would be going on year-round. Why Gemini during this period of time in the year? What's the relationship?
This is the month of Gemini.
Right. But why this labor goes on year-round, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Well, they kind of all do. And the lessons that we learn in them are things that stay with us. So it's, you know, we all have all signs in our chart, and we live with them on a daily basis. So we learn each month a little bit more about all of them. But I like to think of the particular month of the sun that's in it and all the little planets that the sun always brings with it, from our perspective at least, Mercury, Venus, Vulcan, they're all right there with it. And so to us, it seems like the whole month is flooded with the light of Gemini or whatever particular sign it's in.
It also has to do with the certain weaknesses inherent in the rulers, which you can usually find in the exoteric rulership, in this case being Mercury, which is one of haste and the lower mind, and overcoming the weaknesses that are inherent in the exoteric rulers. And basically, it's a path between the exoteric and the esoteric, well, and eventually the hierarchical. But in the, since Hercules was a personification of the path of discipleship, it mostly has to do with the exo and esoteric rulership. So in a way, you can see this whole thing as the movement from the influence of Mercury to the influence of Venus, and you can trace that. For instance, he's very impatient. He when he first talks to the teacher, he says, "Show me and show me now how to get the apples, because I need them for my work." You know, that's very Mercury. That's an aspect of Mercury, which also comes from his native sun sign, which is Aries, right? You know, it's that impulse to manifest now, you know. And so the path to Venus, the Venus influence is in a sense unfolds in these three phases of the labor, which are personified by the directions.
Thank you. Does that answer your question, Victor?
Well, somewhat, but I don't know enough about astrology yet to really comprehend everything.
It is all of these lessons are ongoing. You're right in that respect. Ginny, you had a comment you wanted to make?
Well, in simple language, I just want to say that the new moon in each sign brings forth the esoteric and exoteric influences of that sign into our experience more fully. And so at each lunation cycle, at each period of the zodiac, there is a special combination of energies and forces that make themselves known to us. And so those particular lessons of that sign are more readily available at that period of the zodiac experience. And so if we pay attention to that, to the particular ray forces and energetic forces of the planets at any particular zodiac sign, such as Gemini now, we can learn through our own experience the qualities of that zodiacal sign.
Right. Thank you for pointing that out. Not only the new moon, but the full moon, because, you know, just as we, with our meditations, work on our physical alignment of our alignment of our lower vehicles, the same thing is true with the Earth's alignment with the sun and the moon in relation to these new moons and full moons. So that is one of, you know, that special alignment at those times is one of the things that aids the work of those rulers of the signs of the energies being transmitted, of the rays being transmitted to us at those particular special times. Thank you very much for pointing that out. Okay, I still see Victor's hand up and Ginny's hand up. Are those residuals or do you either, they're both gone. Okay, does anybody else have anything else they'd like to say before we close this webinar out?
I want to note that Walter has a web link that he has placed in the question box that can be shared with everyone.
Walter, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Can you take that and post it into a little thing on the student webinar, you know, just take my the posting that I have that invited you to this particular webinar and reply to it and say this is a follow-up from that. Can you do that?
Absolutely. Is that like in the Student Union Forum?
Yeah, it's in the Student Union Forum, and then I have a thread that says the labors of Hercules or whatever, and you know that's where I post them when I invite you. And then if you can just follow up with that and put that information, because we do have lots of people who watch these after the fact. They can't attend them, but watch them after the fact. So,
absolutely.
Thank you. And thanks, Joe, for watching for that. Okay, anything else? Are we ready to say goodbye to everybody? Let's unmute everybody to say goodbye.
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 Thanks,
bye.
Everything. Thanks for everything.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody, for attending.
Oh. Aloha from Ginny.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.